If you'll go on to Genesis 45, this is where we're going to pick up. So, as we were completing our study last week, we were talking about that Joseph had revealed himself to his brothers, and we discussed the interaction that they had with one another. At first, their word kind of, you know, how are you going to react to us? And what was his reaction? Okay. And he wept so loud that it had become such an emotional thing that even Pharaoh's household was like, what's going on? And so you have this very emotional interaction. And so that's kind of where we ended at. There's one verse I want to cover kind of to get us started. So go to verse 8. And as we were closing out, we're talking about the attitude that Joseph has, which is very different than many people in the world. He says to his brothers in verse 8, "So it was not you who sent me here, but God." So what's the significance of that? Joseph seeing a bigger plan by God, that God had taken their choices and helped providentially to bring Joseph to Egypt so that he could do what? He could what? Save his family and the nations of the world. I mean, it wasn't just his family. You might say they got the greater part of the blessing, but through the work God did in Joseph, still God did all that, right? God's the one that revealed the dream. This is all a God thing. But he used Joseph in doing that. And again, the attitude of Joseph, I think that's what we should try to attain to. And so you have this reunion, and as you continue to read here, you find out that Joseph says, "I'm going to take care of you. I'm going to take care of you and your children. You're not going to have to worry about that." And so you kind of seems like things are all good, right? Well, later on, we'll get to chapter 50, and maybe the brothers are having a tough time believing what Joseph is saying. So just keep that in mind. I have a lot to cover. Some of this I'm going to have to summarize. I encourage you to go back and continue reading and studying. But so what happens is Pharaoh says, "I'm going to let your family settle in the land of Goshen." Can you remember why not in Ramses? Yeah. So I don't know why this is the case. We don't get a big explanation. But in Egypt, sheep herding was an abomination. Rereading that today, I was just thinking about how odd that sounds in my ears, that a sheep herder is an abomination. I don't know if that comes out of their idolatry or their sorcery stuff. But for some reason, they had culturally developed the idea that sheep herding was an abomination, or just tending animals in general. And so so that that didn't cause a disruption, he says, "You're going to settle in the land of Goshen." And in the end, that becomes a really good thing, because that land is really good for their lifestyle. Yes?
I mean, even in the U.S., there's been a lot of farmer versus rancher.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just mean the part that a sheep herder could be an abomination. I don't know. In my mind, that sounds really peculiar. A word didn't want to get out. Huh?
Is that way in Texas for a while?
That way in Texas. But yeah, well, I know out west, the sheep herders and the cattle herders didn't always get along. But anyway, go ahead.
Turn. It's just, well, the mechanics. Mm-hmm. That's the break in a lot of times. They don't want them on their land.
Yeah, and And again, I could see hatred or dissension between them. It's, in my mind, a second level thing to say, that's an abomination.
Yeah, that's
That's the part I'm kind of key on. Not that there could be friction. Well, people always have frictions. But I don't call everything an abomination, right? You try to reserve that term for sinful things, right? Things that God calls an abomination. Huh? Yeah. Well, for the Jews, the pig farmers were probably considered an abomination. So anyway, he says, I'm going to take care of you. He ends up giving them change of clothes. They provide for them a way to get back. They even give them wagons. What's the notable difference that between what he gives his other brothers as opposed to Benjamin? Yeah. He gave him, so each of the brothers, it says in verse 22, he gave them a change of clothes, right? That's one. And so he gave them changes of clothes. But to Benjamin, he gave 300 shekels of silver. So that's pretty valuable, right? And five changes of clothes. So again, it's his brother, right? I'm going to take care of my brother. He gives him that. Verse 24, he gives them, allows them to depart, sends them on their way with this message: do not quarrel on the way. How to interpret that exactly? I'm not exactly sure. What does he mean by quarreling about what they did to him previously, quarreling with one another, quarreling with people along the way? But what's the intent of asking them not to quarrel? I think that's the bigger thing here. Why tell them that? He doesn't want them to delay. Like, go quickly.
So, like, don't quarrel about, like, wondering if you should come back or not.
Yeah.
You should leave your land or not. Like, you need to go
ahead and go. And I didn't even think about it from that angle, but that could be another reason why he's saying, don't wrestle with this in your mind. Come back.
Maybe he knows him.
Yeah. So anyway, he sends them on the way. And then you get down to verse 25. They get to Jacob. What's Jacob's initial response?
He didn't believe him.
In the verse 26, he said, the text says, and his heart became numb, for he did not believe them. That's an interesting way to paint the picture, isn't it? It says his heart became numb. What does that maybe mean? He fainted, maybe? You ever get to a point where you just kind of, either you've gone through so much emotion, like maybe you've had somebody close to you pass away, and you've dealt with that for a certain period of time. Does it ever become kind of a feeling of numbness? And they have a history of being deceitful too, right? They've already broken his heart once.
It was almost too much.
Or maybe a few times. Yeah, and I think that's the sense of it. It becomes so overwhelming. But I think there's another important thing I just want to mention, is I think this also speaks to the ideal that it's easy to believe a lie. It's much harder sometimes to accept the truth. And the lie was, Joseph was never dead. He'd never lost his son. He was in Egypt. I mean, he did lose his son, but not to death, right? But yet he believed forever that a wild animal had killed them.
Because his sons had told him that. And yeah. They were probably in trouble with their dad.
Can you imagine that conversation? But it's easy to believe a lie, sometimes much easier to believe that than to believe the truth. What's the old statement? It's easy to believe a lie you've heard of a thousand times than a truth you've heard once. We all can fall susceptible to that. And he's just overwhelmed in the moment. But It says in verse 27, the spirit of their father Jacob revived, and Israel said, it is enough. Joseph, my son, is still alive. I will go and see him before I die. Now that might indicate that maybe he's going to go to Egypt and die immediately. That's not what happens. But we'll get to that later. So he's made the decision to go. And so when you get into 46, that's what they do. They set out for Egypt. Along the way at Beersheba, he again is confronted with God in a vision in the night. And we'll talk about that in just a second. Go ahead.
They were invited into Egypt and given all types of blessings from Egypt as compared to when they left Egypt.
Oh, later on, yes.
That enters in with one way, but the entrance out was a totally different.
There's also the interesting thing that they were given gifts eventually when they left Egypt in Exodus, but that's a different study. But that is kind of fascinating. So he is at Beersheba. This is an important place, isn't it? We've been to Beersheba a few times. Jacob has been to Beersheba. He's seen God here before. Here he is again. He offers sacrifices. And then God speaks to him. He says in verse 2, Jacob, Jacob. Jacob responds, here am I. Then verse 3, God says, I am God, the God of your father. Do not be afraid to go down to Egypt, for there I will make you into a great nation. I myself will go down. That's interesting, isn't it? Did you just catch that? What did he just say? I will go down with you. So he's been granted permission by God that this is a good thing. You should go. I will go down with you to Egypt, and I will also bring you up again. And Joseph's hand shall close your eyes. So a couple of significant things there, a couple of promises. Three, really. Number one, God says, I'm going with you. The second promise is what? I will bring you back. Now, there's two instances where that's true. How is that fulfilled in two ways? What? Okay, that's the secondary way, maybe the broader fulfillment. What's the initial fulfillment of it? Yeah, not his bones, that's Joseph's, but after his death, his body is laid to rest in the same tomb where his family has, except for Rachel, right? And so we'll see that later on. So you kind of get the fulfillment. Jacob isn't buried in Egypt, neither is Joseph. He is eventually brought back to the cave in the field of McPhail. So God says, I will bring you up again, and Joseph's hands shall close your eyes. So the third promise is it'll be Joseph who's there with you at the end. That closing of the eyes is kind of a tender way of saying, upon your death, it'll be Joseph right there with you. And so Jacob then goes on his way. The rest of the chapter deals with some names and some lineage stuff. I'm not going to deal with that here. I want to go on down to the end of the chapter. In verse 28, you have Jacob and Joseph reuniting. That would have been a pretty awesome moment to see. How long has Jacob been without Joseph? How long? You know, 23 years, I believe. 23 years at this point. It's been a long time. He's been gone longer than he grew up there, right? They came into the land of Goshen. Joseph prepared his chariot, went up to meet Israel in Goshen. He presented himself to him and fell on his neck and wept on the neck of, on his neck for a good while. You have a very just intimate moment between these two. Here's the son of the wife that he loved so deeply, and that he loved. And then he says in verse 30, "Now let me die, since I have seen your face, and I know that you are still alive." So, just a pretty awesome thing. Before I want to, I miss something. I don't want to miss this. Verse 27. So you have this reuniting. Verse 27 is significant as you look at the end of it. How many people actually come with Jacob?
70.
Now, why does the Bible note that number, do you think? Yeah, when we go to Exodus, if you go to Exodus chapter 1, it tells you that you know, eventually all the brothers pass on and everything, but those who remained, the remnant, became very fruitful and multiplied. Now, we're not given a number, but the idea is God truly blessed the household of Jacob to multiply his numbers. Now, that goes back to what? Genesis 12, Genesis 19. What did God promise to Abraham? Which was compared to what? Offspring, right? That his people would become a mighty nation in number. And that's exactly what happens. What's amazing is God starts with 70. And he multiplies that 70 very quickly. And so that's what we see play out in Scripture.
That number, is that total number? I mean, is that eliminating anyone below 20? Maybe you can help me remember, 306,555, that was one of the first censuses.
Yeah.
That
eliminated anybody who was below, like, military age. Didn't eliminate.
Fighting age.
Right. Which is like 17, 18, something like that. And then it also eliminated women, too, I think. So.
Does 26 not say set 66 besides Jacob's sons' wives?
Yeah. All right, I'm going to see. All the persons belonging to Jacob who came into Egypt, belonging to Jacob, who were his own descendants, not including Jacob's sons' wives. I don't know where the extra four come from. I didn't really look into that in depth, but that's something I can look into. I don't know where the four, because obviously they're 12 sons, or 11 without Joseph. So I don't know the difference in those two numbers. Good question. Either way, whether you're talking about 70 or even 136, that's still, I think the significance is what God took his little and made something great out of it. Yeah, I don't want to. Yeah, so I think the exact number there is not the significant thing. I think the significant thing is God took his little and made great out of it. And so I've done some investigation, the Stephen number. I think, anyway, that's near here or there. But I know there is a discrepancy there. But I knew how to resolve that, but I forgot.
Well, that's kind of a characteristic that God proves that he's with them. It's done different times when Well, Gibeon, you know, they've been out, they had like almost a million, and they got down to like 300, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, they still had too many, and it kept cutting. So to make it the odds of him winning overwhelming without God, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah. So go ahead, Vance. Yeah, so, and he does mention that right before that in those numbers. He said Joseph and his two sons, and then if you add, Joseph. Why'd I say Jacob? Yeah. So, I'll be honest, finding out the definitive way that numbers come up with, I don't know right now. But good questions.
Well, it's really immaterial, but like you mm-hmm. said, it just shows that either way, you can see how they prosper.
Yeah, yeah. And again, that kind of makes sense what Vance was saying, how you go from 66 to 70. Again, and we're not told, is he including everybody, or are there some people eliminated? And the other thing is servants, you know. Are servants included in that? I don't think so, but again, great questions. But for my time, I've got to move forward. Thank you all for your good comments. Let's, is that okay if I go ahead and go forward here? So let's go to 47. We do have an interesting interaction and some important information. You have Joseph brings Jacob before Pharaoh, and they get to have this interaction. I just wanted to note something that's said. So verse 7, the end of that verse says, who blessed who?
Jacob blessed Pharaoh.
Jacob blessed Pharaoh. Again, in verse 10, who blessed who?
Jacob blessed
Pharaoh. So twice it's mentioned. Anytime the Bible starts mentioning things multiple times, it's really trying to get us to pay attention. If you go to the book of Hebrews, and you look at, they're talking about Melchizedek and how he blessed Abraham, right? And it talks about how the greater or the lesser is blessed by the greater. So what is the significance that Jacob is blessing Pharaoh? Jacob, in at least in the eyes of God, is greater than Pharaoh. There's something really significant about that. It is kind of amazing. You'd be backwards, right? You'd think Jacob would come in there for a blessing for Pharaoh if we were talking in human ways. If you went and stood before the president, whoever's in that office, you would be hoping they would say something good about you, right? That they give you some kind of blessing. Can you imagine going before the president or for the leader of any nation and saying, you know, I'm come here to help you out?
What did he do to come with the blessing?
To me, it would just be some spoken words, right? So he's saying some kind of words over him to bless him in that way. Again, we're not told in the context what exactly he said, but he would have offered some kind of verbal blessing to him. Go ahead, turn. Well, and if you think about it, has not the household of Jacob blessed Egypt?
That's what I was wondering.
So there is kind of a...
It just seems like there'd be more, because, I mean, when Joseph went in to get his blessing from... Or not Joseph. When Jacob went in to get his blessing from... Why am I getting this confused?
From Isaac.
Mm-hmm. So Jacob has more.
Well, you remember blessings often had a prophetic nature to them. Again, we're not given the content of the blessing, but it could have been something prophetic too. But there is a broader sense where the house of Jacob has already blessed and will continue to do so for 5 more years at least. Well, of course, the life of Joseph, but for the famine portion, it's going to last 5 more years. And so imagine Egypt without Joseph. Would they have been prepared for the famine? And so so sending Joseph to Egypt was a blessing to the house of Jacob, but in a broader sense, it was even a blessing to Egypt and the rest of the nations. And so there's already a sense in which that's been fulfilled.
I just wonder, and it's all assumption, if that means that Pharaoh might be in heaven one day. That he obviously has a true respect for these people, and it seems to be more than just because Joseph was a smart ruler.
Yeah, and I'll leave those up to God ultimately, right? He gets to make that call. It would be conjecture on my part to say any kind of way to that.
Laban was blessed because Jacob was working for him.
Mm-hmm.
And he had all his blessings. And Laban understood his blessings came because of Jacob.
Yeah.
And the same with Pharaoh. Pharaoh's blessings, the food they had to eat in the battle, was because of Joseph.
And we'll see, or you'll see as you read, Joseph will even go further in blessing Pharaoh and using the time period to grow the land of Egypt. It's going to expand during the time of Joseph. This is the time when the rule of the fifth to Pharaoh comes into place, where Pharaoh will obtain a 20th percent of what people earn. The other important thing here is you get the age of Jacob. He is how old? 130 years. So just keep that number in mind. Again, he's been without Joseph for some good amount of time. We'll see in a minute how long he lives in Egypt. I'm going to have to kind of go forward here. Again, the next section talks about the fifth to Egypt. This was something, again, Joseph helped to establish. If you go down, verse 27, it says, "Thus Israel settled in the land of Egypt, in the land of Goshen. They gained possessions in it and were fruitful, multiplied greatly." So that 70, or whatever number, is beginning to multiply quite quickly. And Jacob lived in the land of Egypt 17 years. That's significant. So the the days of Jacob, the years of his life, were 147. 17 with Joseph where? In Canaan. 17 with Joseph in Egypt. I just think it's interesting when numbers line up, right? You get this lining up of numbers. And again, it wasn't like Jacob moved to Egypt and just passed. He lived there 17 more years. 17 years is a long time, right? Yeah. But, you know, our son's going to, one of them's going to be 13 this year. We're going to have a teenager, right? And I think, how quickly 13 years go? Well, time's precious to us as human beings because we have such a short amount of it. And so you have 17 years here. That's a significant amount of time that he has with Joseph. Doesn't make up for the time he lost, but at least he has something. The end of this chapter, I'm going to have to end here. I wanted to finish up. We're going to have to come back because I'm way out of time. Let me cover the end of this chapter. We'll come back, get the last three. So much good information. When the time drew near for that Israel must die, he called his son Joseph. Notice not the sons, but he calls Joseph, and he makes him give him a promise. Do you remember what the promise is? What? Take me back to Canaan. He says explicitly in verse 29, "Do not bury me in Egypt, but let me lie with my fathers. Carry me out of Egypt and bury me in their burying place." And Joseph responds, "I will do as you have said." He said to him, "Swear to me." That's not enough. He wants the oath, right? And he swore to him. And Israel bowed himself upon the head of his bed. Now, he's not passed yet. The next chapter we'll talk about in chapter 48, how he blesses Ephraim and Manasseh. And we'll discuss for just a moment, since I've got another class, I can definitely do this. We'll talk about the blessings on the 12 sons and kind of some important details of that. Again, thank you all for participating. Good study there. Please go ahead and read 48 through 50, and we'll be ready to discuss those in 2 weeks.